in preparing to leave, Hashem teaches Moshe and Aaron about some of the mitzvot that the Jewish people will need to undertake. The mitzvah noted as the very first commanded to the Jewish people is HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This month will be for you as the first of the months. Rishon Hu Lachem is the first for you for the months of the year. I would like to try to understand what this idea means. Basically, there are added words in this pasuk. If it just means to tell us, listen, we're now in Nisan, we're now in the first, in a month, in a lunar month, and it is in this very lunar month when the Jewish people will be walking out. There are a lot of ways of saying that. HaChodesh Atem Yotzim Mitzrayim. This month you're walking out. But rather, Hashem does not say that. He says, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This month is for you, the first of the months. L'chadshei Hashanah, towards the month of the year. The Ibn Ezra says a very insightful remark. Presumably until now, the Jews have been using the solar calendar just like all other peoples. And now, this command, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, L'chadshei Hashanah, is now we're going to switch modes. You're now going to be the Jewish people that use the lunar calendar. And I'd like to discuss two ideas as to why the Jewish people use the lunar calendar, perhaps, and not the solar calendar. Why it is so important that we adopt the lunar approach. One idea might be found in the very famed Medrash. The moon and the sun in the time of creation were essentially the same size. And then the moon speaks up and says, you know, Hashem, it's not okay for both the same size. There's jealousy. It's not a good idea. Twins. There's sometimes jealousy. It's a big factor. We're twins, same size. Something's going to have to change. And the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, you know, you're absolutely right. And the moon, the way it's portrayed, is trying to vie for preeminence. You know, God, we can't both be... I'll be the martyr if you need to make one larger. You know, I'm available. And Hashem says, you're the one that spoke up, you're going to be little. You'll be the little one. We discussed a few weeks ago the notion that the sun is called the Ma'or HaGadol, the large luminary, and the moon is called the Ma'or HaKatan, the small light. And maybe the idea is because the sun, a Gadol, is that which is independent. It radiates its own light, while the moon reflects only the light of the sun. It does not shine on its own. The little guy is the moon. And if it started that way, Hashem made it that way, he's very dependent. Rabosai, we are the moon. When you equate yourself with the sun, you're basically saying, I am independent, I am great. When you equate yourself with the moon, you are claiming, I am the lowly moon. I will radiate everybody else's light. Hashem exists in the world, I'll radiate His light. And maybe that's why the Christians had so many problems with the notion that the earth revolves, rotated around the sun. The sun's got to go around us. We're the great giants. We're the independent, wonderful ones. Cannot be that something else. We're going around the sun. We're dependent on the sun. We're dependent. We're lower. But the Jewish people function in this way, that we are lowly, we are humble. We find this idea in another medrash, very well known, that when Hashem was looking for a mountain where to give the Torah, so the tall mountain said, Hashem, choose me. And Hashem said, no, you're tall, you're haughty. And the wide mountain said, choose me, I'm the widest of all. My kids from Gan come home with these wonderful songs. And choose me, I'm the wide mountain. And Hashem says, no, you're a bit too haughty. And then Hashem chooses Har Sinai. Har Sinai says, I'm just a lowly little mountain. Why would you choose me? Yes, you're the one. You're the man. You're the one I want. That's right. And that's the Maharal who explains the same reason, the very same reason why Hashem gave the Torah in the desert is because of this. And I'd like to try to explain this notion a little bit deeper with a few more stories that might hit home a little bit better. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, when Gush came home from a yeshiva, from a tiyul, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein went and checked the bus. The Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Gedolei Adar, went and checked the bus when the Gush boys came back from a tiyul. And as it turns out, there was a boy who had some bubble gum and apparently misplaced it, and it ended up on the floor. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the Gadol B'Yisrael, got on his hands and knees and started scraping the bubble gum off the bus floor. That's humility. That's what it means to be lowly. I remember the Korosh Yeshiva of BMT, where basically all of your Rebbeim began, Beit Midrash LaTorah, where Rav Miller was the Rosh Yeshiva for 2 years, I believe, 3 years. A friend of my grandfather was the founder of it, the first American program in Israel, a guy named Rabbi Whitey Horowitz. His brother was Brownie. And, they were both in YU. Whitey actually went white very early, prematurely, and that's why he got that nickname. And he was a giant, and he opened the first American program in Israel. Rav Polyakov was one of the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the head of a kollel of mechanchim. Okay, in other words, this we called it the screaming kollel. There were all these guys that would prepare full sugyas. They were poskim, and he was the head of it. And they would go to the back and start yelling at each other. And it was amazing to watch. Nobody learned. Afternoon Seder was just a spectator sport of watching Rav Polyakov's kollel. And Rav Polyakov had the final say. He's a giant. And not once or twice did I catch Rav Polyakov actually cleaning the bathrooms. It was more. Yeah, every now and then, almost every week, I would catch Rav Polyakov. Rebbe, can I please do this for you? I'd love to clean the toilet. If you could please go back to the Beis Medrash, I'll take care of it. And he would be adamant. No, I started this mitzvah. I'll finish it. You could lower yourself. Now, there are a lot of cases and scenarios where this comes up. Let's take, for example, the Chadar Ochel, or the dormitory. If you ever notice about yourself, I don't want everyone to start thinking about the other guy. That's the joke I told last week about the difference between the Hasidic Rebbe and the community rabbi. I'm talking to you. I'd like to hold on myself as a Hasidic Rebbe in that way. Have you ever noticed when someone's telling you something, you start thinking about what you'd like to say in response? You know, it's funny you mentioned that story. You know, something like that just happened to me. And you don't respond at all to what that person just told. He told you something horrific, and he's trying to really pour his heart out to you. You're like, oh, you know, that I remember when that happened to me. He's not interested in what happened to you. And a lot of us really get stuck in that mindset. An anav, a humble person, is someone who can learn from everyone. That's what it means to be a humble person. I can learn to be the moon means I can learn from him, I can learn from him, I can learn. And so many times our haughtiness gets in the way. We see all too often we have a lot of congregants that like talking about They're rabbis. They're shul rabbis. It's a sport in some communities. How many jabs can you take at your shul rabbi? Especially after the speech and sermon. It's a problem. This is not being humble. Being humble is, I could learn from that person. I can learn from everybody. If there's someone that you don't learn from, we're lacking humility. Now, humility does not mean that you don't have self-confidence. And, you know, when the Ramban had to defend the Jewish people in the famous Judeo-Christian polemics against Pablo Christiani, the Ramban did not say, well, me, lowly me, I know nothing. Let me just hide in the corner. The Ramban said, I am the authority, and I am going to defend the Jewish people. Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky, known as one of the super giants in England, the author of the Chazon Yechezkel. So he was once reported to a courthouse to serve as a character witness for someone he knew, a congregant of his. And the lawyer wanted to impress the judge. So the lawyer gets up and says, Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky, are you not the greatest sage to have ever walked the land of England? And Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky says, it's correct. The judge stops the procession, the proceedings, and he says, Rabbi, doesn't your religion teach humility? So Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky responds, it does, but I'm under oath. It doesn't mean that you don't know who you are. But it means that you could be the moon and you could say, you know what? I can take a step back. I could learn from every single person. I could learn from every rabbi, the one that's boring, the one that speaks in a monotone, the one that you deem has no personality. I could learn from every single guy. I could learn from everyone. Everyone is valuable. If there are people in the world that aren't valuable, they're roommates. There are people in front of you. Can't be. That's being the sun. That's being haughty. The Ribbono Shel Olam chose us because we're humble. As a matter of fact, it's reminiscent of the very famous Medrash that Hashem went looking around the world to offer the Torah to other religions and nations. Edom, do you want it? Moab, do you want it? And each one left, well, what's in it? Don't kill. Don't kill. We love killing. Are you kidding? We can't accept that. Don't. How about you, Yishmael? What's in it? No adultery. No adultery. We live by that stuff. Are you kidding? And each one after the other. What is so great about the Jewish people that the Ribbono Shel Olam chose us? You know what's so beautiful about the Jewish people? We may not be the most talented people out there. It could be that Jewish white men don't know how to jump. It could be that we are not the best musicians. It could be that we're not the most talented in art, in wisdom, in anything. But we're really humble. And we're ready to learn. We're ready to take it from Hashem. And that way you grow. The guy that's haughty, Rabosai, is like an exclamation point. And when the wind comes, the exclamation point breaks. The question mark just bends a little bit more. It gets in the way of parenting. It gets in the way of being a spouse, a proper spouse. It gets in the way of learning properly. It gets in the way of basically all of life and friendships and relationships. You're not really connecting to your friends because you're still too haughty in your own world. I can't learn because I can't ask questions and I can't offer answers because maybe I'll be shot down. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, at the hespit of his brother, the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, he said over the following story. He said that I saw, now you have to understand who this is, that story. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was one of the super giants of America, one of the Gedolei Adar. His brother Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik was known as one of the top three super giants of the 20th century. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, a gadol in his own right, at the Levaya and the Hesped of his brother, says, "You know why I did not reach the ankles of my brother? Because when I would watch father teach, and he said, Aaron," Rav Aaron was older by 3 years, I'm sorry, Rav Aaron was younger by 3 years, and he said he would watch his father teach his brother, the Rav, when he was a little boy. And he said, "You understand?" He'd say, "No, I don't." He would get a little patch. And Rav Moshe, the father, would then teach it again. "You understand now?" "No." And he would give him a little patch and say it again. "You understand now?" "No." And he would keep saying no until he understood. And Rav Aaron said, "I'm no fool. So when my father, I learned by watching what happened with my brother, when my father would say, 'Do you understand?' I said, 'Yes.' But I didn't really understand. And that's why I never reached the ankles of my brother." Now, a patch may be a harsh approach, but for so many of us, it's just the embarrassment, the anxiety. What's going to happen if I actually say a stupid remark? It could be. I don't want to open that door that maybe some of you experienced terrible cases of bad education, rabbis who belittled you or criticized you, sarcastically quipped back with responses, what they thought were bad answers that you offered, or bad questions. And if that ever happened, the Ribbono Shel Olam has his ways with all. No one has a free pass in heaven. And unfortunately, someone let them in to the educational world. And I saw and experienced a number of them. And it's not acceptable. There's no such thing as a bad question. There's no such thing as a bad answer if you're trying. And I mean, what's a bad question? What's a bad answer? The guy is trying. What does that mean? But if you're not trying, because I'm too scared, my haughtiness will come crashing down. It's getting in the way. Can't be a good student. You can't really learn seriously. I know it all. I know it all. The rabbi speaks. I've heard that already. This was great. I was teaching in a certain school. The first time I was teaching halacha, and I spent the summer coming up with be'iyun shiurim in halacha and hilchos Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, in-depth shiurim, ravids and rashbas, rans. It was the first time. But the first time it's a problem, because you don't realize that I'm talking to guys that necessarily can appreciate rashbas and rans and ritvas. But I was foolish and younger at that point, and I prepared be'iyun shiurim, and I delved in, worked and sweated over them a whole summer, gave them over, and a student says to me, "It's boring." So, okay, I hear. Why is it boring though? Is it, you know, maybe I'm not charismatic enough, maybe I'm not explaining it enough, maybe you don't like be'iyun? So the student says, "I learned this already. You learned the way I learned the Ravid and the Ritva and the Rat? Who was sneaking in my mind before? This is a chiddush. I just came up with it. How did that happen? I don't believe you." I can't say that, of course. But what did that person mean? The student means, "I learned Rosh Hashanah. I know. We blow shofar. I got this one." So many times, our haughtiness gets in the way of our own perseverance to just grow a little bit more. I remember the first time a boy came up to me, and I was reading a library book, and it had a stamp, a library stamp on the side of the book. And I was reading it on Shabbos. And this boy says to me, "You know, you can't learn that, read that on Shabbos. It's ripping the word." So I had a few choice words for this individual. they weren't all so kind. Years later, turns out I held its mother. I held its mother. But it turns out, it is a machlokas. I wrote a work, an essay, against the Shach. The Shach is one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat. The Shach is a giant. He was on the road fleeing for his life, most of his life, and he was able to become the giant of giants while he was fleeing for his life. And I took on the Shach because he had a commentary of the Rashbam in Baba Basra. And I learned that Rashbam, and I knew the Shach was wrong. He got the pshat wrong. I sat on it, that Rashbam, for a few hours, and I knew I was right. So I wrote a report explaining the Shach's interpretation of the Rashbam, and then explaining why he was incorrect, and I posited my approach, which was certainly correct, until a few months later, I came across another Rashbam, which said explicitly, like the Shach. I couldn't believe it. I understood the Rashbam. I have monopoly rights on pshat of this Rashbam. How dare the Rashbam contradict me? Ashkenazi. What? How did that happen? And I wrote another paper. Can't apologize to the Shach. Wrote a paper explaining where I erred. Boy, was that a humbling moment. When I responded so quickly to that boy, you're reading a book, you know, you can't. So yeah, he was one of those guys, I understand. And I was in high school at the time, so it was all loud. However, that does come from haughtiness. As I grew up a little bit, we have to all work on being less haughty. That's what it means, that we use the lunar calendar. We're not the sun, we're the moon. We're going to work with the moon. And I'll just end this point, and then we'll move to the second point, with one more story, how it gets in the way of marriages. So many people have the inability to just budge and say you're sorry. I heard from a relative of mine who does not have a great success record with marriage. He pointed out to me when I was getting married that, you know, the trick is not to win the fight. It's just to know that you're right. And, you know, everybody chuckles. Good one, good one. I've heard that one before. Come up with a better one. The only thing is that if you're in a fight, you're already wrong. It takes two people to make a fight. If you're in a fight, you're wrong. And I just didn't find the joke funny. Rav Schechter was at a dais. Rav Schechter is one of the giants today, a posek of the generation. And there was a whole panel. And a question and answer session erupted. And everyone kept asking Rav Schechter questions. And Rav Schechter said, after many of them, I don't know. At some point, he said, I really feel bad. You keep asking me very difficult questions. You have to ask people with much bigger authority. I don't know the answers to your question. I'm sorry I'm not being helpful. A lady was sitting next to Mrs. Rebbetzin Schechter, Rav Schechter's wife. There was a lady sitting next to her at this event, and the lady whispered to Mrs. Schechter. She says, you know, your husband keeps saying, I don't know. She said, I know. She's thinking a little bit embarrassing. She said, you know, had my husband learned just a little bit from yours, we'd probably still be married. But he knew everything. And because he knew everything, he was smarter than all of them. And he was always smarter than me, and never knew how to say he's sorry, couldn't compromise. And it gets in the way. It gets in the way with our kids, it gets in the way with our as parents, it gets in the way with our relationships. And sometimes you may know that it happens. It comes up in relationships that all of a sudden people start thinking like, you know, this is a great guy, but you know, he doesn't listen. He's not with us. So that's the moon. Mirat Hashem will all be like the moon. That's the first piece. Second piece is shorter, but I'd like to share a story, because the second piece about the moon being like the moon is that we are obligated to take control over time. With the moon, there's a very specific point. It stops waning, going down in size, and then it starts what's called waxing, the increase in size of the moon. At that point, that little moment in time, that's called Rosh Chodesh. You have to figure out how to identify it. It's in our hands entirely. And the Torah teaches us how to identify that moment. We go running to Beis Din. See, Beis Din, we saw the new moon. So exciting. And they make sure that we saw it correctly. And they say, Mekudesh. It's sanctified as the new moon. Time is given to you. Which date is it that Pesach will fall out? That's in your hands. When you determine, it was Rosh Chodesh Nisan here, Chodesh Hazeh Lochem. It's yours. This one is yours. It's not my mitzvah. It's my mitzvah, but you're in control of it. And I want to point out how important that is. There's a story in Baba Basra about Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Now, there's not one story. There are loads of stories about Rabba Bar Bar Chana. He has amazing creativity. And it's very difficult to actually comprehend the stories about Rabba Bar Bar Chana. And someone known as the Gura came up with an explanation of every one of these stories. Then Rav Weissmandel came along and he explained the Gura. My Chavrusa used to say, you never know who's more brilliant, the Gura who explained Rabba Bar Bar Chana or Rav Weissmandel who understood the Gura. And there's stories like the guy is carrying two wine glasses while jumping back and forth on horses, and then he sees a big giant bird land on and the giant bird was the size of 60 houses after eating a serpent and a frog that was the size of 60 houses. And this raven sat on the tree, and he responded, wow, what a big raven that is. And that's the end of the story. Rav Nachman Breslov's stories are very similar to that. You're not really sure what exactly is going on, and without the commentary, you're totally lost. So the Gura comes along and he explains that a lot of the stories, an amazing book, Rav Weissmandel's explanations, were put into a work called The Juggler and the King. If you want to read it, now you know what it is. Rabosei, the following story takes place. Rabba Bar Bar Chana is walking on the path. Upagali hahutaya. Baba Basra, Hayin Dalet Amud Bet. And the Taya, an Arab merchant, the merchant, met me on the path. The Omar Lin, he said to me, To achvi loch, come, let me show you, Hecha ara urakia nashki ahadadi, where heaven and earth kiss. Let me show you where heaven and earth kiss. You want to see? And he says, yeah, I'd love to see. Where do heaven and earth kiss? That would be amazing. So, he goes with him, he takes his bag, and they go. When they arrive at the Mata Hatam, when they arrive there, Manach, his bag, however you say that, he puts down his bag, and he's taking in everything that's going on, the whole scenery, where heaven and earth kiss. And he turns around and he notices his bag is gone. Where did it go? So he says to the Taya, to the merchant, Ika gan viacha. There are robbers. I didn't see any robbers. It's just the two of us. What's going on here? So the Taya says, No. There are no robbers. You know what it is? It's the sundial. The sundial was coming around.
your bag was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it scooped up your bag, and it's gone. He said, what do I do? He said, just wait. The sundial is going to come back around in a day, and tomorrow, if you're still here, if you watch it at the right moment, your bag will be there, and you'll pick it up, and you'll take it. And that's the end of the story in Bava Basra by Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. Rav Lau said a beautiful explanation. Listen to this. And he said, where do heaven and earth kiss? That's Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Eretz Yisrael. That's where heaven and earth kiss. And what's the Jewish traveler's bag? Rabbi Bar Bar Chana's traveler's bag? That's the bag that has come with us throughout history. It's the tallit that escaped the pogroms. It's the menorah that made it through the Inquisition. It's tefillah that made it through the Holocaust. That sitter is in the traveler's bag. And when he gets to Israel, I'm an Israeli now. I don't have to be Jewish. The only reason I had to be Jewish was to unite me with the other Jews in Gullit. As a matter of fact, when I was in my wonderful social work school, so we had a comparative religion class. So there were two Orthodox kids, me and a girl, and then there were a few conservative, a bunch of reform. The non-Jews were not in the class. And the professor, he says the following question. He says, I understand what unites Orthodox. He didn't like Orthodox, but he said the following. Well, I understand that mitzvot that they have around the world unites them. Conservative, they also have so many suggested mitzvot that unites them. But reform, the whole platform is, you're created in the image of God. Be spiritual. So whoever you think, you should be spiritual. Go ahead, be spiritual as you wish. So what unites you people? So one of the Reform girls raises her hand. What unites the Reform? Fighting against the Orthodox. That's very clear. So many Israelis, the new Israeli, they put their Jewish traveler's bag down upon getting to Eretz Yisrael. And if I may take the liberty, it's not just to Eretz Yisrael, but every single time where the Jewish people hit a moment of affluence or success, and the great New York, where there are 2 million Jews alone, so then you don't feel the need to be Jewish. So many of us rise to the occasion if we're out of town. If I go to the university, which is out of town, that way I will be great. I will rise. But if I go to New York, if I'm in New Jersey, there's so many Jews, I will fall. I could put my bag down. And you think, you know, it's okay. I could put my bag down. It's not a problem. But overnight, his kids ended up intermarried. Overnight, he realized he was no longer religious at all. He was no longer keeping anything. Because the guys that were in yeshiva decided that they're going to go to Europe. A few days before they go home. They'll just go travel, tour Europe before they head home for Nissan break. And I begged them, please just prepare your trip. Look up where Chabad is so you could find out where the shuls are, where the kosher food establishments are. Just do a little bit of research. I'm not telling you don't go. I'm just telling you, please prepare. They didn't prepare. And I'd love to say, it's okay, they still kept everything. But it went down so fast. The first day, you know, we could just eat the vegetables in the non-kosher store, and then we could eat the fish and the milchix, what's not kosher about cheese, besides lots and lots of things. And therefore, they ended up on a downward spiral, and within their 4-day trip to Europe, They landed back in the United States after a year of yeshiva, having been mechallel Shabbos and eaten treif. One boy didn't actually eat treif, meaning what they viewed as meat treif. It's a downward spiral. You put that bag down, it goes very quickly. And he says, I don't understand. Ika ganvi hacha? There are robbers. There's oppressors. Someone's oppressed. I didn't see Russian czars, communist Russia, the Iron Curtain. I didn't see Muslim Spain above me, the Christian rule. I didn't see it. I don't understand. Where did it go? So he says, the Taya says, no, you don't understand. It's very simple. It's just time. That spark of the Jew, it may have gone away. It'll come back. Just wait here. Wait a little bit. Next generation, your grandchildren, they'll come back. Your great-grandchildren, someone will come off to Israel. He will get inspired, and he will be from... It's okay. And Rav Lau points out, and that's the end of the story. But that's the end of the merchant story. It's not the end of the Jewish story. We cannot say, it's okay. We'll wait. We cannot wait. You have to take time into your hands. You must grab hold of it. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky gave his son as a bar mitzvah present a watch. And he said, son, you're now in control of your time. Use it well. That is the whole point. And we'll conclude with the famous Grah. The Grah who was so upset for having wasted 6 minutes 1 year. Halavai, there should be an hour. We don't waste 6 minutes. A year. Bosai, we have an opportunity called the opportunity of life. It's like a supermarket. You can go and take every silly, nourish item and put it in your wagon. You put all the Nashen and all the Juju's and all the Hershey's, and then you are shopping now as a married man to bring home produce for your family. And this is what you're filling up your wagon with. And at the end of the day, you're going to go to the cash register and the cashier is going to ring up each item one by one. At the end of the day, you have life. You could fill it. You could fill your time with as much things, as many things as you want. You could do what you want with your life. You're free. But if you're smart, you keep your eye on the ball, and you'll do what it is that you want to do in order to actually maximize your time. Because at the end, it gets rung up one at a time. This hour and that hour. We have to maximize our time. HaChodesh HaZeh Lechem, you're in control. Let's make the most of it.